The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, folks, great to see you. We've been working our way through the questions, why follow Jesus when the world has moved on? So far, we've looked at truth, forgiveness, purpose, hope, and today the idea of community. Now, I don't know if you remember, if you've been a Sydney resident for a few years, you may remember this story actually received a lot of publicity. In 2011, they found a lady called Natalie Wood. And she'd been dead in her house for 8 years, and no one had noticed. This particular Herald article's in 2014, but it was 2011. The article says, during the 8 years she lay dead and forgotten in her Surrey Hills terrace, so it's just a few kilometres down the road from here, cobwebs covered the furniture and part of the ceiling fell away. Her electricity and pension were cut off. Outside, a forest grew and grew until a tree spread into the upstairs room, and still, no one stopped to wonder what happened to the well-dressed woman at 139 Kippax Street. And so she died. Now, for 8 years, no relatives, no one contacted her. It turns out in her will that she actually owned the house in Surrey Hills, so guess who's turned up not long after? You know, where there's a will, there's a relative. So, but I thought, it's sad that she died. She was almost 87. It's sad that she died, but it's a tragedy to die alone like that. Fortunately, it doesn't happen too often, I thought, until I did a little bit of a Google search. Did you know they call these things unattended deaths? When someone dies and then literally their body begins to decompose because no one's missed them, there's between 50 and 150 of these each year in Sydney, unattended deaths. So much so that there's a business called Sydney Forensic Cleaning, and if you have to clean up something like this, they have a 1300 number and they'll come and literally clean it up. But what you notice, if you just do a little bit of digging around with news articles, etc., on the net, the Western world's becoming more and more isolated from one another, and loneliness becomes more and more of an issue. Ironically, loneliness seems to be more of a problem in bigger cities. The more people around, the more likely you are to feel lonely. In the United Kingdom, it's become enough of an issue that, here's a news bulletin from news story from January this year, the United Kingdom appoints a Minister for Loneliness. Tracy Crouch left Britain's Undersecretary for Sport and Civil Societies to coordinate the government's response to loneliness. She's now the Minister for Loneliness. There's Rick Morton, who's the social affairs reporter in Sydney for The Australian, wrote, "Loneliness Ministry recognises the toll on modern society." Listen to what he says about why it is that people may feel lonely. He says, "What causes loneliness precisely is not so clear. It's different for the young and for the old. Researchers have shown that teenagers and preteens are far more likely to feel lonely, get this, because of social media and the social media accounts they control." Why? Well, social media means you're in touch with everyone. Why would you feel lonely? He says the hyperconnectivity of their lives lends itself to false conclusions about the joy and the happiness present in the lives of those around you. The grass is always greener. One of my daughters, who's actually works in marketing, etc., and social media, says Instagram is about hating people. Right? Why? Well, they're the ones having the beautiful meal or on holidays in Hawaii or watching the sunset when you're dragging yourself through an ordinary work day. He continues, Aged Care Minister Ken Wyatt revealed a horrifying statistic that discomforted the nation. Almost 40% of people in nursing homes never receive any visitors. More broadly, about 1 in 10 Australian adults feel lonely all the time. So 1 in 10 lonely all the time. 17% feel lonely most of the time. And the figures are common across most Western countries. Why? Well, we live busy lives. We kind of learn to be private so that you feel more, a little more secure, and loneliness is growing. Now, it's kind of an irony, really, that in some ways Christianity may have contributed or at least helped begin this process. How so? Well, here's a book that I wrestled with this book for a long time, Inventing the Individual by Larry Sudentop. I'm going to finish it one day. I'm about three quarters of the way through. I start to read it, my brain hurts. But what's his thesis is this. In the ancient world, the Greek, the Roman world, people did not think of themselves as individuals. Now, you may think that's strange, but they didn't think of themselves as individuals. People understood themselves as members of families. And your social identity and your religious beliefs were all tied up with the family and the head of the family. And so the radical change that Jesus brought, and the Apostle Paul, as he taught on that, is that you can relate to God as an individual. And your personal faith in God, your identity, your choices, your responsibilities, you're as an individual, you can do that. And then he traces through, in some detail, through to the Middle Ages, how that's affected the Western world. Now, individualism is not a way that every culture thinks. It's just Western culture has been influenced by Christianity, and yet we've actually taken that way further, so that individualism's become the great thing that we worship. And it's not a hard step to go from the idea of individualism to loneliness. But I think you'd agree, we're hardwired to want relationship. For a child has to be socialised, to taught how to and to interact with people. And from what I've been reading lately, the concrete has been poured and set by the age of four in terms of how you relate to people. As you're older, you're more likely to be alone, is what all the statistics say. Or if you think the toughest punishment that you can hand out to people in some ways is solitary confinement. We're made for relationship. And that's a theme that runs right through the Bible, that God understands we're made to have a relationship with God and then with other people. So right at the beginning of the Bible, God creates Adam and puts him in the garden, and then all the animals are there, and Adam names the animals. But then, Adam's got his Staffordshire Terrier and his pet monkey. But what is it that God says? It's not good for the man to be alone. And so God makes Eve, and Adam's very happy about it. Now, in the Bible, there's a big sweep. I don't know how familiar you are with the Bible. It's a big book. But in the Bible, there's a kind of a sweep of when God is blessing people, the blessing or the good thing from God is the idea of gathering people together, of actually creating families and tribes and people, bringing people together to love and care for one another. And then God's punishment on people is that he scatters them. So God's blessing to Abraham is, I'll make you into a great nation and your family will grow. I'll build a people around you or from you. The Tower of Babel, as people ignore God, the judgment there is God scatters them over the whole world. So there's a big theme in the Bible of God building a people that belong to him and then will love and care for one another, building this community idea. In fact, the New Testament will say Jesus' whole mission, the whole point of Jesus coming and his death and his resurrection, was about God bringing people to himself, creating a people. I give you two really big ideas. If you're not used to the Bible, that's okay, don't worry too much. But you see them, for example, they're both out of Paul's letter to the Ephesians, and the Ephesians is all about basically God building this community, this beautiful church that he's going to build. In chapter 5, the Apostle Paul writes about how husband and wife should relate to each other. And he says to husbands, if you want to understand how to love your wife, how to love your bride, have a look at this. He says, husbands, love your wives, how? Just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Now that, if you say, Lachlan, hypothetically, if you're about to get married, say, in the next month, hypothetically, there it is, mate. There's the standard. Right. He's getting married in April. So that Christ, he came, the reason he died, etc., is to be able to build or to draw people to himself in the church. And the New Testament talks about the church or this community being like, well, the bride of Christ in terms of love and faithfulness. And what's his aim? To present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. So Jesus comes and lays down his life to draw these people to himself. Or in chapter 2, it's a different kind of picture. That is, it says his, or speaking of God, his intent was that through the church, this gathering group of people, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. The idea is that God would create this group of people and it would show his wisdom to all the kind of, the whole supernatural world that the Bible makes us aware of. And particularly what Paul's talking about there is God bringing Jewish followers of Jesus and Gentile followers of Jesus together into one group. Two groups that normally, the Jew and the Gentile, would have hated each other, bringing them together. So Jesus' whole mission, if you like, is creating this community. And it's to be a community where people are welcomed and loved, not on the basis of what they look like or how clever they are or how much money they've got, but basis of being made in the image of God and of actually trusting Jesus and so being brothers and sisters in one family. And even those who don't belong to Jesus should be welcomed and loved and cared for. All right, so what does the word church mean? If you have a look on your program, I think we've put it down there. The word church has kind of got a bit, well, it's a bit confused really about what it means. In English we say church and we could mean, well, a big beautiful kind of sandstone building, okay? Or it can mean a denomination. We say, you know, the Anglican Church or the Presbyterian Church or the Lutheran Church, whatever it is. That's what the New Testament doesn't mean. When it says church, it doesn't mean either of those. Denominations are really functional groupings of churches where together they can do more than an individual church. So a denomination together can do perhaps broader social welfare work or run a Bible college or something like that. The word church in the New Testament is just the word ecclesia, which is where we get the adjective ecclesiastical, etc. Ecclesia, and it just means a gathering or an assembly or a group. I'll show you one use of the word ecclesia that I like that shows that. The Apostle Paul goes to Ephesus. This is in the book of Acts, the early history of the church in the New Testament. He goes to Ephesus, and there's, as so often happens, he causes a riot. And we're told the assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, some another. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. Okay, that sounds like a riot. Except that word assembly is the word ecclesia. So you could translate it, you know, the church was in confusion because, so it's just your basic everyday riot. The word ecclesia just means the assembly or the gathering. It's not a particularly religious word in the New Testament. So here's another big idea. And if you don't quite get it, that's okay, but I'll see. The way that there's two ways that the New Testament writers think about the church, or this community. One is all followers of Jesus gathered with him in heaven. You see this, say, in Hebrews chapter 12 or Ephesians chapter 2. The idea of every believer in Jesus gathered with him in heaven. That's the church all together as a kind of a spiritual reality, if you like. And then the other way of thinking is much more concrete. It's the local congregations. So every place that the followers of Jesus meet together, self-consciously as the church, that's the church. So you can have a church in Randwick or a church in Pennant Hills or a church in New Zealand or wherever it is, and that's regarded as sort of, it's like, that's the church. The New Testament often talks about churches that met in houses. Why? Well, the church is just new and fledgling, church is plural, just new and fledgling in the first century. No big public buildings, not much money. They met in houses. So Paul writes to the Christians in Corinth, okay, in Greece, and he says, Aquila and Priscilla greet you warmly in the Lord. So does the church that meets at their house. And there's lots of examples of that if you look particularly kind of at the ending of the letters that Paul and others write. So it's God's plan to actually build this community of those who trust Jesus and so on, to build that community together. And I think the community idea probably better communicates what ecclesia means in the New Testament. But I don't think we'll get rid of the word church. But as that community meets, they actually have a purpose. They have a purpose as they meet. So there's two ways of kind of thinking about it. One is there's kind of the idea of a vertical purpose as you relate to God. And the New Testament will say as Jesus followers meet, they should open God's word. They should open the Bible and hear what it is that God says to them. As you open the Bible and learn together, usually someone will teach from the Bible. And then also to praise God, to thank Him and to praise Him for His greatness and His goodness to us, etc. So that's the vertical dimension. But church also should not be like an aeroplane flight. Now, I've got a kind of a new job at the moment, and I've been on an aeroplane a lot of times this year. And my worst nightmare is to be sitting down beside someone at the end of a day flying home and for them to say, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you. I'm such and such. What are you?" I just want to sit there and... Right? Does anyone else think that way about aeroplanes? Come on, fess up. I bet you do. That's not to be church. That's not what the community... It's the idea of actually you're there together with one another. And so... how do you care for one another? Let me show you one of the things in the New Testament to talk about what it is that Jesus' followers ought to be doing when they do meet together in this community. The book of Hebrews, written to Hebrew or Jewish Christians who've begun to follow Jesus, and in the context of persecution coming, as the Roman Empire is beginning to wake up and think, wait a minute, these Christians, they're not fitting in with the program. They don't worship the emperor. This is going to be a problem. And so the writer of the Hebrews, the whole big thing about keep going, keep trusting Jesus. You get to chapter 10, he says, "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful." In other words, he's saying, hold on, keep trusting Jesus, keep living his way, because he'll keep his promises. And then what? "And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." When I looked up yesterday, this word spur one another, it really is the word, you say incite, stir up. It's like, it's the reaction you get when you poke someone with a pointy stick. So do that, stir one another up. Why? Because those who follow Jesus should be loving people, acting in their best interest, caring for them, and doing good deeds. So I need a G up now and then about, well, how am I being loving towards people? Am I living the right way? Am I setting a good example? And the idea is that other people who follow Jesus should be encouraging me in that. And that means actually meeting together. And I'm sure, you know, Paul would have said that even, you know, if he'd had the Australian Christian Channel to watch it on television. Whoever wrote Hebrews, we don't know it was Paul for sure. The idea of keep on meeting together and keep turning up. You can't actually love people, care for them, unless you're turning up to see them, unless you actually begin to know them. So stir one another up, keep going. Why? You notice at the end, particularly in view of the day approaching, talking about the day when Jesus will return and bring the judgment day. When will it be? Well, it gets closer and closer every day. So keep encouraging one another, keep stirring one another up, keep meeting together. All right. Now let me just show you some things about the idea of how a Christian community should work and see if you can pick the common thread in here. And it's a common thread that often people miss. Okay, here we go. I'll read it. So Paul writes to the Christian Ephesus and he says this, "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you." Or Paul writes to the Christians in Thessalonica, and he says, "Therefore, encourage one another with these words." Or when Peter writes his letter, he says, "Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling." Or when John writes his letter, "For this is the message you heard from the beginning, we should love one another." Did anyone pick up the kind of common theme there? Anyone? It wasn't not a rhetorical question. I say, who needs rhetorical?
One another.
Well done, Peter. Thank you. The one another thing. And that is, the community is, you don't pay the pastor to run around and do everything. You do it to one another. You offer hospitality. You love one another. You encourage one another. You correct one another. You're doing it together. A lot of people will think that church is a bit like a football match, and that is, there's a whole lot of people in the stands who need exercise, watching a few in the middle who desperately need rest. And that's the way some churches, it's not the way it's meant to be. Now, let me fess up and say, it's very obvious to anyone who's been involved with churches or even watched from a distance that often churches get it wrong. People get it wrong. That people are selfish, that you've taken a whole bunch of people who acknowledge or should acknowledge that they're sinners and you put them together in a group, and is it any wonder that you get catfights and stubbornness? And that's what happens too often. Or with denominations, we've seen in the last year or more in Australia terrible examples of where denominations have failed to protect the innocent and then wrongly protected the guilty. And we've seen that. I think what does encourage me, though, is if you read the New Testament is saying that there have been problems with the way people behave right from the beginning. There never was a kind of a golden age when everyone was perfect. There's catfights and stupidity in almost every letter of the New Testament as well. That's what people are like. So there's problems, yes, and so on, but let me tell you, when you see a community of people who care for Jesus, follow Jesus, when they actually do love each other and do the good deeds and care, and it happens often, it's a beautiful thing. A beautiful thing. And Roger was asking, we were talking earlier on, what does that look like? Well, I've seen a community where, you know, a young mum has a new baby and she's got a couple of little kids to look up, and all of a sudden just meals just arrive because someone's organised a roster and the food just arrives. Or someone gets sick and there's food that just gets delivered. Or I know one man who didn't have a car and he's trying to ride a motorbike in the winter way down on the south coast, and someone just gave him a car. Or there was another man who older man who'd fallen over and hurt his knee and was going to have to wait months for a public hospital operation, and someone stepped up and said, well, we'll pay for a private operation for you if it means you can have it very soon. And when it works, as you care for and welcome people, it's a beautiful thing. Perhaps the biggest problem, I think, in the way that people will think about this community that Jesus pulls together, it's a little bit like me and my gym. Okay, so I belong to Anytime Fitness at Bondi Junction. Would anyone like to guess what time of day you can go to Anytime Fitness? No, it is. Anytime, that's right, well done, Anytime. And so when I joined up, I turn up and there's a nice young lady in the office, and I walk in, I look at the facilities, I say, what can you do for me? She explains, and I join. And it's not that expensive, $15 a week or something, and I just turn up whenever I want, use the facilities, and it's all around me, and then I leave. And there's a lot of people will think of church like that. Even like people who follow Jesus. Will they love me? Will they care for me? What's in it for me? How can they? And that it's totally the wrong way to think, and not the way that the New Testament expects. Now, if you've been to any of my talks, you'll know I'm always quoting Rodney Stark, one of my favourite authors. His book, The Rise of Christianity, is absolutely brilliant. The second half of it, about how did the Christian movement go from just a handful of people in the middle of the first century to 10% of the Roman Empire in the early 300s, when Constantine kind of jumped on the wave. How did that growth happen? And he explains a whole lot of factors. One of the counterintuitive factors, and the reason I can remember it so clearly, is he says the churches grew because it cost a lot to join one. It cost a lot to be a member. It cost a lot in terms of stigma, social stigma, persecution, your lifestyle, etc. It was expensive, not just in money, but expensive to join. But the implications of that were huge. Listen to what Professor Stark says. He says, it was not simply the promise of salvation. This is early first century, second century churches. It was not simply the promise of salvation that motivated Christians, but the fact that they were greatly rewarded here and now for belonging. Thus, while membership was expensive, it was in fact a bargain. That is because the church asked much of its members, it was thereby possessed of the resources to give much. For example, because Christians were expected to aid the less fortunate, many of them received such aid, and all could feel security against bad times. Because they were asked to nurse the sick and the dying, many of them received such nursing. Because they were asked to love others, they in turn were loved. And if Christians were required to observe a far more restrictive moral code than that observed by pagans, Christians, and especially women, enjoyed a far more secure family life. Christianity did not preach that everyone could or should become equal in terms of wealth and power in this life, but it did preach that all were equal in the eyes of God, and that the more fortunate had a God-given responsibility to help those in need. What's he saying? It's because they gave a lot into that community that they were able to receive a lot. And what's the New Testament? Jesus saying he was creating a community of people who, first of all, will turn up wanting to serve, to love and to care for and invest in others. And I think that is the secret, actually, to finding community, to turn up, how can I serve others, which is what Jesus says is the way of greatness, rather than what can I get out of this? Because as you serve, you will be cared for and loved and looked after. Yes, I think that's true. And I suspect for me, the New Testament will be saying to me, you should be expecting the return of Jesus any time, and I think I am often less than urgent about that. Interesting that in Peter's second letter, so the letter of 2 Peter chapter 3, he says that people will scoff at the idea of Jesus' return. He says, but with God, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. God doesn't measure time the way that we would. And God waits to give people time to get right with him. That's why he waits rather than bring the judgment day. So, I think that inevitably kind of happens. Well, all the more as you see the day approaching. I think the idea of the fact that Jesus will return and bring the judgment day should put a sense of urgency and priority into people meeting, encouraging one another to love and to good deeds. I think that's the... Yes? Keep doing it, keep meeting, don't wander away because Jesus is coming back. I think that's what he's saying. Yes, sir? Yeah, that's right. It's the idea of keep trusting, keep going. And that's the whole of that book of Hebrews. That's the big message.
One that came through an SMS line.
Yes.
I don't get as much of a sense of community at my church. Is there a church around where there is a genuine community?
Like I say, not every church gets it right. And if you want, I'd be happy... There's many churches in our city. We are very much blessed. There are many churches in our city who want to trust and follow Jesus and actually love and care for one another. Not every church has the right culture. Okay, but sometimes too, to just attend a bigger meeting of 100 or more people, it's very hard to get to know people properly. Often it takes the investment of time in a smaller group of a dozen people. We actually get to know and care for one another that way. Yes. I think that's exactly right. If you sit back and wait to be served and loved, etc., that's the New Testament saying, the Christian, the community of those who belong to Jesus is the opportunity for you to serve and love them. And generally, I think as you do that, you'll get that back. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.